running this program. So the society is very much true to form today. Joe Morris is somewhat of a known politician, and I will not add further to the delay of the program by reading some kind of detail. I was told by Valenza that I should introduce him as the Gordon Jessel of Philip Society. Don, you're dating yourself. That probably there aren't 25 people doing that identify with that. Maybe Mark Russell. Joe, to condense things a little bit, Joe is also at the conclusion of his remarks. We'll then introduce the MBs. Joe?
Thank you, Chuck, very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it has often been noted in the past that there is no. One never sees Chuck Edelein and Barry Fitzgerald in the same room at the same time. there are two explanations offered for that. First is that they may be the same person. The second is that Barry Fitzgerald is dead. And Chuck Edelein's intimates are quick to point out that those two possible explanations are not mutually exclusive. Speaking of zombies, I want to refresh the warning that it is in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that we meet, and as you go about your business in connection with this meeting, you will come into contact with a lot of people who are citizens of Massachusetts. They will smile at you. They'll make change. You'll see them operating cars and stopping at stoplights. But just remember, 3 out of every 5 of these beings you see voted for Teddy Kennedy. The recent unpleasantness in Florida involving William Kennedy Smith and Edward Kennedy. Dylan's an excellent adventure. has led to a whole new science of political inquiry in the United States. People, upon reflection, now understand where Ted Kennedy gets his reputation for dynamism. It has always been because when he's out in public, there are members of his staff tugging at his elbow, saying to him, keep your pants on, keep your pants on. Now the meeting comes here. And of course, there is the question, what is the difference between Ted Kennedy and the Iraqi Republican Guard? And the answer there is that the Iraqi Republican Guard have yet to kill their first American. I am a Chicago lawyer. Chuck can tell you that. I'm a Chicago lawyer, but what I'd really like to be is what Dan Hales is. He's a Winnetka lawyer. A Chicago lawyer is a lawyer whose motto is, if it ain't broke, I can fix it. And Winnetka lawyer is a lawyer whose motto is, as a lawyer, I used to work for the Eastern Reagan administration, and one day I got lost in the White House. I was coming down corridors I'd never seen before, and I came finally across an absolutely closed door. I misread the sign on the door. I read it as "Do not disperse," which made good sense to me. But I pushed on, I went through, and sure enough, there were Nancy and Frank. On the love seat, reading policy review. my assignment today is to deliver the annual report, Urbe et Orbe, on the conservative movement and its inner workings of its flagship institution, the Philadelphia Society. And first, it is my happy privilege to announce the election of 16 new members of the Philadelphia Society, elected yesterday by your board of trustees. And they are Herb Berkowitz, Muriel Cahill, David Fan, John Zahn, Robert Hyman, Byron Lamb, Mark Legal, David Lips, Gareth Llewellyn, Brady McWiney, Daniel Peters, Victor Portier, William F. Rickenbacker, Virginia Strauss, John Basil Utley, and Sally S. Wright. The vote on each of these nominations to membership was 16-0, with the exception of Muriel Cahill. The vote on Muriel Cahill was 1,847,679-0. The Commission on Inquiry was appointed to look into this matter, and after a little bit of digging, we discovered that although Muriel is today a resident of Pittsburgh, she's originally from Chicago. They are Chuck Heatherly, whom you know. what you said. Forrest McDonald, whose son Kevin and daughter-in-law Diana have been among us this weekend. Absolutely amazing people. You have not met Kevin and Diana McDonald. We were just back for a week and a half stay from Poland, where Kevin is very much in harness, helping Poland build a free enterprise economy, very much in the middle of that effort. And last night, during the cocktail hour, I had a wonderful conversation with Kevin, in which he revealed to me the latest cultural fad in Poland, Massachusetts jokes. Bob Shuter is not with us today, and Bowles Smith, who we know. There are several trustees in the society who take office at this meeting. They are Thomas Bray, who, as his name suggests, is a journalist. Linda Bridges, who does an act in a New York burlesque house called National Review, R-E-V-U-E, it's a top of the meeting called Linda Bridges Falling Down. T. Kenneth Cribb, not with us today. William Kelly, the
mayor.
Asherokan, New York. It's a small town, so he has to be double duty. He's also a town drunk. And the big deal in Asherokan on Saturday nights is to go down to Town Square and watch Bill lock himself up. and finally, elected trustee taking office at this meeting is Roger Pilon, the director of the Center for Constitutional Studies at the Cato Institute, one of the most scintillating minds, one of the most powerful thinkers, one of the most original philosophers. Roger, I'm sorry, I can't read the rest of your writing. we have some retiring officers. Our second vice president retiring is William Murkison. It's pronounced Murkison. Repeat after me, Murkison. 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 Our retiring first vice president is Chuck Heatherly. And our retired president is Lowell Smith, who has done such an outstanding job this last year as the president of the Philadelphia Society. And I call on you now, all please, to give him an invisible hand. This morning at the annual breakfast meeting of the members. This class of trustees will retire in 1995. Some of these are retreads. They are Leonard Ligio of the Institute of Humane Studies at George Mason University, a man of considerable gravity. Dwight D. Murphy in Kansan, the founding member of the Philadelphia Society, who spells Murphy with an E. David Somerville someone whose loyalty to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States is seriously questionable. David is the head of National Citizens Coalition Canada. and a highly respected Chicago zoologist specializing in rodents and lycanthropes by Andrew Morris. Now, I'm pleased to note that one of the members of the Philadelphia Society, Fernando Monterroso, is now the president of Marroquín University in Guatemala. And on behalf of President Monterroso, I would like to remind you all, no pregunta que su universidad puede ser para usted, pero pregunta que usted puede ser para su universidad. We'll need to paraphrase another Kennedy. The 1991 Fall Regional Meeting of the Society will be held in Indianapolis. Its theme, generally speaking, is federalism, limits of government, and conservative ideas on local issues. The reason it will be held in Indianapolis is that's about as local as you can get. The 1992 Annual National Meeting will be held in a date and place and with a theme not quite set and to be announced later. Lisa Roach, however, has come forward with an amazing and, I think, quite remarkable suggestion that we not wait for the fall of Fidel Castro, but instead have the 1992 meeting of the Society in Havana, Cuba. We can bill it as Bay of Pigs 2 and refer to the cocktail hour cocktails against communism. The new officers for 1991 and 1992, Assistant Secretary Dan Hales, our Treasurer David Sturr, who was here, but may have thrown off at Josh Newman's afternoon. Somebody has to pay for it now. Our second Vice President, Hugh Newton, who succeeds to the Moody Hoover Chair of Youth and Aid, the board voted yesterday. There's a lot of fun to say Hugh Newton's name three times through. Our first Vice President, W.W. Hill, his first name is W, and he's known his friends as Dub. I'm not giving this name. And our new secretary is our old secretary, Don Lipsick. And I have nothing funny to say about Don Lipsick. Rest skips a local here. Finally, our new president is Daniel Oliver. We'll take off. City of Boston, the land of the bee and the cod, where the cabots speak only the lodges and the lodges speak only the god. Not the Dan Oliver and the god speak to each other. They exchange monogram notes. And Dan has a better station. Dan Oliver's blood is so blue that since he developed varicose veins, he says he's not spent a dime on socks. although there is no religious test for the presidency of the society, I would note that Dan is not only an Episcopalian, he's a member of the Prayer Book Society, whose mission is to help Episcopalians distinguish right from spawn. As for the conservative movement writ large, there are a few important developments that certainly pinch upon the world in Philadelphia society. Bill Campbell reports from Louisiana State University an important breakthrough in the fight against insomnia. The prescription is as follows: drink a warm glass of milk, read two 18th century sermons, close your eyes, and try to count. Try to chant the name of Oprah 30 times. This new regimen is called Sandoz. As you know, John Sullivan, an Englishman, replaced William Buckley as the editor of National Review. So now the boss of National Review is someone who speaks with something more nearly approximating an American accent. Don asked me to point out there was a typographical error in the program. Fairbanks is not with the NITSE, School for Advanced International Studies. It should be the Nietzsche, the school. clearly, this morning's discussion showed well beyond good and evil. Beth Fulner will be profiled soon in the Washington Times, where it will be revealed that underneath his mild-mannered exterior, his owlish look, his Clark Kent facade, there's a mild-mannered interior. An owlish look and a Clark Kent facade. But it will also be revealed that he is an international banker, a fabled diplomat, a think tank mogul. Arnold Borsgraf, by the way, also speaks with God. But there's a Korean colonel who interprets for him. starting next week, by the way, the Washington Times shifts to an all-comics format. with the exception of the Supreme Court reporter, Dawn Weirich, who will continue her career as a rock music critic covering Sam Day and the Supreme. there is an important bulletin today from the left, and as far as Don would have to say, I am not making this up. Recently, the Chicago Sun-Times, I have the date and page citation if anyone's interested, noted a study published in the February edition of Consumer Reports, concluding that the so-called green laundry detergents, soaps made from all natural substances, pushed by environmental fanatics as earth-friendly, contain essentially the same ingredients as major name brand detergents. There is no difference between them. The Sun-Times headline captured very nicely, it read, natural versus name brand laundry soap is a wash. But this leaves the question, if there is no politically correct soap, after all, what is a committed tree hugger to do? And I'm not making this up. One, Pat Costner, research director for Greenpeace, is quoted giving the answer, and it's something that most of us in this room have long suspected about that moment. The answer is, and I quote, try not to be so fanatic and clean in the first place. perhaps the major news in the conservative movement in the last year was the ordination of Paul Weirich as a deacon in his church. This sent shockwaves throughout seminaries and theological schools across the land as people pondered the question, does this mean that Paul Weirich recognizes a higher authority? The answer was, no. I am pleased to report that at least someone at Paul's ordination took a vow of obedience, the bishop who ordained him. And of course, today we meet in the presence of our colleague from Boston University, Joachim Matra, known to his friends as Yo. Just say Yo. Yo, of course, was very much involved in the John Silver campaign for governor of the state. What an amazing and interesting campaign it was. John Silver, of course, was supportive of all segments of the society of Massachusetts, Irish Catholics, urban ethnics, and Jews. In fact, on election night, a rabbi walk into Silver campaign headquarters just as the tally of the vote showing Silver's defeat was being posted. At that moment, he walked into Matra, and his opening words were, "Hi, yo, it's Silver, oy vey." As we meet this afternoon, the leftists, former socialists, and Marxists all are hurrying to roll down their red flag, run down to the basement, and die of grief. In no small measure because of the battles that they lost during the 1980s. And one of the major figures in the war we fought during the 1980s is someone well known to you, having served as chief of staff to Governor Reagan, as effectively the boss of the 76th and 1980 Reagan campaign, as counselor to President Reagan, as attorney general of the United States, and now as the Ronald Reagan Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, than this man, a more perceptive, a more courageous, and a more decent person you will never meet. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present to you our friend, the Honorable Ed Meese.